I'm Craig Wilson.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 88, for Sunday, 7th of July, 2013.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about criticism over operators' data pricing, why data expires, smart ID cards, and fibre to the home.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Craig and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Since getting high-speed satellite internet access out here, things have been happening at the lodge. We've posted more pictures.
Yeah.
We've had more inquiries.
Yeah.
And we've had more guests.
Yeah. Yeah. See? We...
Yeah.
So, say yeah to YaClick internet access, wherever you are. YaClick, available from Vox Telecom and Atlantic. SMS your name to 48484 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Welcome to Talk Central. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson. How's it, Craig?
Yeah, good, thank you. A little bit chilly. Some people might hear the odd crackle. That's the fire going in the background. Winter's arrived at last.
Yes, indeed. It's bloody freezing. Anyway, well, lots of hot news to talk about this week. Let's get straight into it. A good place to start this week, we talk about some of the criticism we've seen from the internet service provider industry about the mobile operators' data pricing.
Yes, certainly a topic close to my heart. I find that I spend far more on data than I do on anything else anymore. And certainly the one I'd like to see get cheaper. I'm not too concerned about voice and SMS, frankly.
Sure. But the ISPA, the Internet Service Providers Association, putting out a statement earlier this week, very critical of the mobile industry, and saying that there is insufficient competition in the market and that ICASA needs to step in and ensure that there's greater competition. Now, of course, ISPA is talking its own game here as well.
Sure.
Because a lot of their members are very keen for access to radio frequency spectrum.
Yes.
And so are the mobile operators. So I think it was really a pitch to ICASA to say, well, hey, we're here as well. We'd like access to the spectrum. Look what we've done in the DSL market in terms of broadband pricing, sort of outside of the telecom fixed line element of the cost. And give us a chance in mobile, and let's see what we can do.
Sure.
But the operators, Craig, you spoke to the operators subsequent to that. You asked all of them for some reaction to the ISPA criticisms that mobile data prices specifically are far too high in South Africa, and they had a number of reactions to the ISPA criticism. What did they say?
Sure. For the most part, most of the operators did. A very good job of trying to deflect the criticism away from them and saying that one of the things that came up time and time again, which we've heard before, is, of course, the operators defend the cost on the basis of infrastructure. And they say, well, it costs a lot to build these networks and maintain them, and we need to get the money from somewhere to be able to build even better data services. And one of the ways to do this is by keeping the prices roughly where they are for them. There was also talk from some, Cell C notably, of course, agreeing, at least qualified agreement, saying that yes, prices certainly can come down. But on the whole, all of the operators did a good job of sort of passing the buck, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is perhaps not surprising. I think one of the interesting things out of the ISPA suggestion too was they were arguing that the high price limits uptake of broadband services. And I think there's certainly no denying that. Just speaking to people anecdotally, it's getting less of the case now, but for a long time there was a big worry from people that, if I enable data services on my phone, are they going to cost me a great deal of money? Is this going to dig into my airtime? And given that the operators for a long time have had, out-of-bundle data rates and the sort of 2 rand a meg range, this isn't unjustified.
Still there.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot to be said for driving that price down, aside from for the sake of consumers generally, but to get more consumers using the services.
The problem for the operators, though, is they cut prices, they get more people using the network, they therefore have to spend more on the network.
Sure.
So it's almost counter, it's a vicious circle.
Well,
for them.
Although, so there's an interesting argument in that too. I was at a talk recently where someone argued, she was looking at the cost of voice calls here versus, say, for example, in Kenya. And the difference is enormous. And
yeah.
She said that all of the studies that she'd been privy to had suggested that you drop the price of calling and calling goes up.
Yeah.
She said that there was a great deal of revenue still to be had because even though the rates were lower, the usage was higher. As you point out, though, of course, this does create more pressure on the network.
But, given the quality of South Africa's networks,
that's also true.
regular dropped calls. And I had a fascinating discussion actually with a company called OpenVault. They launched in South Africa last week. If you look in the startup section on Tech Central, there's a piece on them. But they're doing all sorts of interesting stuff around voice identification, voice recognition.
Yeah.
And had a conversation.
For security purposes, right?
That's right, for call centers mainly. Fascinating conversation with them about, I think his name was Paul Hutton, the MD. And he was saying that they had to do a lot of work because of the poor quality of the mobile networks in South Africa. Mm. He said they're significantly poorer than the quality of the networks you find in Europe and the US.
Sure.
And they had to do a lot of work to ensure that their security solution could work on South African mobile networks. Mm. So it's quite an interesting, because you often hear from the mobile networks claiming that, you know, we offer the best, some of the, amongst the best quality in the world. OpenVault says it's simply not true.
Sure, and also, again, anecdotally, but more than once this week, I've been on the phone to someone on their mobile phone who's said, oh, the line is terrible, could you please call me on my landline? And then given me their landline number, yeah. Which has, of course, turned out to be a much better call.
I get it all the time, yeah, yeah.
One of the arguments is if pricing went down, it does seem likely that usage would go up. Obviously, this perhaps isn't ideal for operators, but as you said before, the argument then is to find other services to sell on top of these data services. So that if you're selling more, people are using more cheaper data, then perhaps you can bill them for content.
I mean, that's the billion-dollar question that operators need to answer. What are those value-added services that are going to allow them to make money once data is such a commodity that they can't make money out of it?
Sure, sure. Once the dumb pipe.
That's the question
risk.
They're all trying to answer. Yeah, the dumb pipe risk, exactly. Are they going to be able to find models, or are they simply going to become dumb pipes for Apple, Google, and Microsoft?
Sure.
Interesting times.
Yeah. Anyway. On a related note, of course, one of the things we spoke about this week too was why data expires. And as you know, a lot of the networks, if you buy particularly prepaid data or bolt-on data bundles, they're valid usually until the end of the following month. So if you bought a bundle today, it would be valid until the end of August. And of course, there's quite a lot of outcry about this too. The argument being, well, this doesn't apply to voice time. You know, if I buy X number of minutes, I get X number of minutes until they're depleted. It was an interesting one here too. I spoke to Richard Bowman from who's Vodacom spokesman about this, and he said they have had to contend with this before. And the argument they put forward, which he jokingly said is quite possibly not the most popular argument, is they liken it to a gym membership. And the argument is that they have to buy X amount of data or X amount of capacity on international pipes and so on, and that if they don't use it, they are still billed for it regardless. And this is the argument here is, according to Vodacom, what you're doing when you buy data is really you're buying access to a service for a specific amount of time up to a maximum value of the data. However, if you don't use it during that time, it expires in much the same way that a gym membership you pay, and you can go every day or you can go once a month, and either way you pay the same rate. I'm not entirely sure I'm sold on this argument, though. I realize that they do buy data that way. They do have to try and provision and predict. But given how, the sort of real-time stats they have available, I find it difficult to believe that there are enormous implications for the networks if they... how far in advance do they have to buy this data?
They've got it anyway.
Well, precisely. I feel like, this is a very well-versed response that they've, had to think about. But I'm just not sure I'm entirely sold on it.
No, I agree with you. And besides, you made the point in your piece that why don't the operators actually sell you... If that is true, if this argument that they put forward that they've got to invest in the infrastructure and they need some sort of certainty around that investment in that infrastructure, then why not... And there is a higher cost associated with not expiring data or allowing data to expire over a year or 3 years, then why not simply charge more for that, for data that that has a longer expiry date?
Sure. I think this is exactly it, because I don't know about you, I recently changed networks again, and I found that since I moved to the new network I'm with, I'm spending a far larger amount on data precisely because of these expiry dates. I find it a little more tricky to predict how much I'm going to use in a month, and then one also has to go out of one's way to try and time things correctly. So you've got to make sure ideally that you buy data at the beginning of a month, because then it's valid until the end of the next month, whereas what you don't want to be doing is buying data right at the end end of the month, because then you only get sort of 30 days on it. Yeah. And this is difficult. If you then run out of data before the end of the month, then you get penalized, because you say you only want to buy a small amount so that you can wait until the following month. You then pay a massive premium on buying, say, 100 megs versus buying a gig or two.
Yeah. That's why I like models like the ATOM model, for example, where you buy 60 gigs of bandwidth and it lasts 12 months and you use it whenever you want to use it.
Sure, sure. Exactly.
I mean, the model probably works for them as well, because you've got all this data and you end up using it in the first month and buying another 60 gig of data.
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
But yeah, I know.
Well, an alternative, I mean, I would tell you my favorite one was there was a Cell C package, 400 Rand, 3 gigs valid for a year. Now, 400 Rand for 3 gigs is certainly not competitive given the going rates.
No.
But the valid for a year made a huge difference, because if you only use 500 meg a month, then that works out far cheaper than actually buying 500 meg a month on these standalone packages.
Yeah, I'm the mobile operator's perfect customer. They must love me, because I'm one of those customers on a contract. He's loaded a 1 gig monthly data bundle onto my phone. I never know how much I use on a month-to-month basis.
Sure.
The data expires. I don't even know when it expires. I think it expires after 2 months, although I could be wrong. And there's massive breakage involved here, and they must be making an absolute fortune out of it.
The breakage is great, yeah.
So, I am thinking of moving to a prepaid contract, though. I was due for a handset upgrade a month ago,
and you've been so strong and held out.
Been so strong, and I haven't. I haven't got a new phone, and I've got to wait another 11 months, and I'm going to move to prepaid.
Right. I think it's a great idea. As you know, I'm a big advocate of prepaid. I think the notion of breakage is broken.
Yes.
And this is certainly the way people should go. And at least for the most part, except for data, you get what you pay for.
I like the fact, by the way, that Orange, which we've discussed in previous podcasts and reported on quite extensively on the website, has launched an e-commerce store in which they sell handsets and tablets and that sort of thing at discounted rates. And when you look at the rates that are charged on Orange's store and then compare them to the prepaid rates for handsets from South Africa's major mobile operators, you see the sort of margins that are getting attached to those handset sales. So
and that's substantial, right? I think the example was the Galaxy S4. Or S3 even. One of them was a full 2,500 Rand cheaper on the Orange site.
Yeah, I forget the exact handsets, but there's some amazing deals out there. I saw, and it's obviously caused by price cuts from the manufacturers as well, which are getting passed on quickly by Orange. But for example, the Lumia 920, the top end handset from Nokia, and there's a new handset coming soon. I think it's called the 1020.
The 1020, yeah.
So obviously they are starting to clear stock ahead of that launch. But the price of that's dropped on the Orange store to 4,800 Rand, which is just incredible
for an
top end exceptional Windows Phone smartphone.
Absolutely.
I saw the HTC X, also a Windows 8X, or also a Windows smartphone, cut to about 3.6 or 3.7, which are great rates for very good devices.
And this is exactly what you want for the prepaid market. I mean, like it or not, and certainly, of course, the operators don't want people cottoning onto this. But I just find it baffling that people buy cell phones on what's essentially amounts to hire purchase. Because if you can draw up a very quick Excel spreadsheet, and even if you pay the operators ludicrous markups on the prepaid handset over the period of 12 months, you still spend less than you would buying the phone on contract.
It's worked very well for the mobile operators until now, but yeah, you're right. I think that consumers are starting to cotton on to the fact that it's not worth it for them. And also,
It's difficult to buy a phone for 6,000 Rand cash, right? That's a hard decision to make. But when your only option is otherwise a contract at, say, 400 Rand a month, I mean, if you actually sit down and do the maths, buying the phone outright is always cheaper.
Sure.
Mm.
Yeah. I was going to add something to that, but it's completely slipped my mind.
So
maybe we should move on.
We'll move on.
I wanted to chat quickly about fiber to the home and fiber projects in South Africa generally. I went to a press conference this week at Vodacom, specifically hosted by the head of Vodacom Business, Vuyani Jarana, where he spoke about Vodacom's plans to play more aggressively in the convergence space, which is code at the mobile operators for fixed line space. And they're talking up more aggressively rolling out fiber. We've run a couple of stories on this on Tech Central in recent weeks. And they're still very much focused on the business market, but they're keen to go after the SME market, whereas previously they focused on the top end of the corporate market. And they want to deploy as much fiber as possible. They say it's not affordable to do it in residential suburbs like Bryanston, certainly in places where people are spread out in big houses, sprawling properties. But there's more and more talk about FTTH in the South African market. You know, Telkom is looking at doing it in some residential estates. I get the feeling, and I know I've said this before, but I get the feeling that someone's going to pull the trigger on FTTH. I don't know if it's going to be MTN or Vodacom or Dark Fiber Africa or
Neotel. Or
I don't think it's going to be Neotel. They don't have the resources to do it. So it probably won't be Dark Fiber either. But maybe one of the big operators one of these days is going to say, to hell with this. We're going to pour 30 billion rand into building a national fiber to the home network. And I think the moment someone does that, I think everyone else is going to do the same thing.
Sure. And this is the problem, right? Is convincing someone to make to do the initial outlay that actually is required to get people connected.
It's a big capital project, and it's going to
it's going to be someone who's willing to play the long game.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while to recoup on this.
Yeah, and the operators, the mobile operators in particular, have grown fat on mobile profits, and I don't think they've been particularly keen to reduce the dividends they pay their shareholders and those massive net profits that they've been earning from their mobile businesses. But as the market gets more competitive and they need to find new areas for growth, maybe one of them is going to make a call and say, well, actually, we need to invest this amount of money, and maybe we need to actually suspend our dividend payments for a couple of years while we build out an infrastructure that will allow us to really compete effectively and perhaps dominate a new market segment in South Africa.
And there's also, I mean, they're all putting so much fiber in the ground anyway.
Mm.
There's going to be, at least in some instances, times where it's going to take quite some time before that infrastructure is anywhere near capacity, even with use for LTE networks and so on.
Yeah.
In terms of how many customers, particularly in the South African market, are actually making use of things like LTE,
yes.
They're putting the fiber in the ground. As government has shown with its projects like the Be Wired project, it realizes that it's only going to use a fraction of the capacity and it may as well sell it on. And in terms of the operators, perhaps not selling it on, but perhaps finding ways to monetize it themselves, could be the answer, particularly if they start in areas, you know, that are, say, blocks of apartments. You know, I'm thinking of the Ilovos, Killarneys, Rosebanks, the sort of places where one exchange could connect potentially 60 apartments, you know, where then the numbers game isn't quite as bad as when you're trying to connect standalone houses.
I was having a very interesting chat over lunch today with our good friend Aki Anastasiou from Talk Radio 702, and he was we were sort of talking about what it would take to get an FTTH network off the ground in South Africa, and we've actually reached an interesting conclusion that possibly the biggest thing that's holding back a mass rollout of FTTH, other than things like the geographic spacing in South Africa's suburbs and that sort of thing, is the fact that DStv has a monopoly over pay television content. Triple play services is what's really driven for FTTH in other markets.
Sure.
There's no competition in the pay TV market, and you know, most people who can afford these services already have a rich bouquet through DStv, through satellite.
Sure.
And so there's not necessarily a compelling reason for a telecommunications operator to roll out infrastructure if they can't get access to the content, which has already been so tightly sewn up by MultiChoice.
Sure.
So it's an interesting argument, and
although again, surely with the right company with the right proposition, could approach MultiChoice and say, well, you know, we'd like to include you as part of our bundle. We'll pay you
but
for content.
The problem is the guys are really getting that through satellite. So what is the incentive for replacing their satellite dish and putting in a fiber connection instead, just to get the same thing?
Sure. Well, I suppose
in addition to an internet connection,
unless they can get the internet, you know, unless they can get the internet and the content all for less than they pay for them combined at the moment.
Yeah, and MultiChoice is not going to agree to anything like that. Not while they have a monopoly
in certainly
pay TV market. I think it's a really interesting one, an interesting challenge for regulators. There's already talk, and there's a complaint that's been laid by Top TV on digital media against MultiChoice over its
locking down of specifically
sports content.
Mm.
And we've seen this week that there's been a complaint which has agreed to be investigated by Botswana's competition authorities. I think it's a really interesting one. I think there ought to be a debate at regulatory and policy level about the dominance of MultiChoice in the South African pay TV market and the impact it could be having on the telecom sector and the rollout of fibre.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's an interesting one, and perhaps a subject of a future column.
Sure, and I find it very interesting because, you know, what is the top bouquet on DStv cost? 600, 650 rand a month?
Well, if you buy the HD PVR package, you pay an additional access fee, so it's probably close to 700 rand a month now.
Right, which to me is just staggering. As a non-DStv subscriber, that to me just says that's money I can spend on a good internet connection.
Sure, I feel the same way, but not everyone does.
No, indeed.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move along to our last story we wanted to just touch on briefly this week, and that's South Africa's introduction of smart ID cards. Finally, we're getting rid of these horrible
green
barcoded ID books, which I can never find mine.
It's not even the book I loathe. I keep mine in my incoming physical mail container at my front door in case because I only need it to go to the bank and once in a while to renew a driver's license or something. But my biggest gripe with the green ID books is that it's still got a photo of me from when I was 16. It's just embarrassing. It seems like the longer you have to keep a photo, the more likely it is that you'll look like a sex offender in it.
Yeah. Just imagine what you're going to be saying when you look at your smart ID card 20 years from now.
Well, if it was really smart, it could replace it every decade, but yes. no talk yet on what these are going to cost, though.
No, there isn't. I presume it'll be in line with the sort of costs around...
And I presume if it isn't, we're not really going to have a choice, are we?
No, we don't have a choice. They're launching them on Mandela Day, which I think is the 18th of July.
That's right,
yeah. And they're going to be issuing them to politicians and various other...
What do they call it? High-profile South Africans.
High-profile South Africans like President Jacob Zuma.
It's not just people who look tall when you look at them from the side, though.
Tutu, Desmond Tutu, Winnie Madikizela Mandela is also getting one. There were a couple of other names mentioned in the SAPA release on that this week. But they're starting the process this month, and they should actually get it underway for you and me from August. So finally, a process that's taken, I think, almost 20 years since they first spoke about actually replacing our green ID books with these smart ID cards.
So we're going from a dorm pass to a smart pass, is that the argument?
That's a very good one. Anyway, cool. Let's move along. We've got our usual features to get through. Our winner and loser segment of the week. We, in fact, don't have a winner this week. I guess we can't always have a winner.
No, indeed.
But we have managed to pull out a loser, and that's our Southern African television viewers. Strange one to pick, but they've I think in the context of South Africa we'd probably say they were winners because they can no longer receive access to the SABC. In countries like Zimbabwe, Botswana and others, Sentech has finally cut off access to the SABC and to ETV,
which of course was also the object of a complaint by ETV's sister company, eBotswana.
That's right.
Which was essentially arguing that people had learned that you could just advertise on SABC if you wanted to reach Botswanan audiences.
Yes.
Anyway, because they were, I read a stat that said that SABC was the most watched channel in Botswana, even though it's not officially available there, which is quite staggering.
The issue happened when there was the Nagravision conditional access system that Sentech uses was compromised by hackers. And what happened was they then reverse engineered it, or I don't know what these guys do, but they basically managed to import compromised decoders from China that used the compromised Nagravision encryption, and they could then decode the signal that Sentech was broadcasting on its used to be called AstroSat, it's now called Vivid. Which is broadcast across Southern Africa. And for years, they've been enjoying free SABC channels. Now, and apparently in these countries, SABC is the bomb because the state-owned broadcasters in these countries are so terrible.
Sure. One has to wonder at just how terrible they are if exactly. The SABC exactly. is that much better.
Exactly. But the other issue, of course, was that there's issues around international content because content gets licensed to be broadcast in particular territories. So the SABC was licensed to broadcast movies and comedy shows and all that sort of thing in the South African context, not to the whole of Southern Africa. So the content providers, I believe, also up in arms of the fact that this content was being watched outside of South Africa's borders. Anyway, Sentech has shut down the system, and our neighbouring countries can no longer receive this. I believe it also has an interesting implication potentially for the upcoming elections in Zimbabwe, because the Zimbabweans were also watching a lot of this SABC content, and now they are restricted to watching ZBC, Zimbabwean TV Corporation, or whatever it's called, which obviously is controlled by Robert Mugabe.
Sure.
Which
may in fact be even less independent than our SABC.
No doubt about it. No doubt about
undoubtedly.
It. I don't think SABC is directly controlled from Luthuli House, whereas I suspect the Zimbabwean Broadcasting Corporation is his master's voice. So that's our loser of the week, Africa's TV viewers.
Yes, in the meantime, we recommend perhaps a trip to the library.
Yeah, for sure. Our app picks of the week this week, Craig, you've picked something, I think it's called ViscoCam, or is it VSCO Cam?
VSCO, it's a visual something, I forget, but VSCO Cam is the one. It's at the moment only available for iOS, but I'm fairly sure they're going to try and roll it out to everything else soon. And it's wholly replaced the default camera on my iPhone, mostly because, and it's not the only app to do this, but the way it's done it I particularly like, If you tap the screen twice with, you know, two thumbs or just two fingertips, you get one controller you can move around to set the focus point and another one that you can set the exposure. And it's a really simple feature, but this is also one of the big differentiators between things like, you know, professional SLR cameras and your Happy Snappers, is that the Happy Snap tries to make all the decisions for you and the SLR allows you to take this sort of control. And that's exactly the idea here. You'd be amazed the difference it makes being able to separate just those two. Obviously, exposure is how bright or dark a scene is, and focus is, well, the point that's going to be in focus. So being able to separate those out is great. It's also got great editing tools, all the usual things you'd expect: straighten, crop, white balance. You can also lock the white balance, and it's just got a really, really pleasing interface. You can export to all of the major apps you might wish to use, and you can also, of course, export to your camera roll. It does these at full quality, so you don't lose any of the potential quality that you would in the export, and it's best of all, perhaps, it's also free.
Free's always good.
So that's my pick for the week. Duncan, yours is in light of the news that Google Reader, which I believe neither of us used, has now shut its doors once and for all.
No, but reading all the articles about the closure of Google Reader, which I think happened at the beginning of this week, or at the end of June, there's a lot of people have been raving about an app called Feedly, which I've heard a lot about in the past but never used. So I downloaded it on my Android device this week. It's available right across all platforms. But really cool little piece of software and a really great way. It's kind of similar to Flipboard, if you've used that before.
Sure.
Bit different here and there, but similar sort of concept where it really pulls in the RSS feeds of websites.
And sort of builds a personalized magazine.
It's a personalized magazine, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way. I'm always looking to... when I'm sitting at my desk, I use an RSS reader in Chrome, the web browser. When I'm sitting on my couch, I really don't want to have to grab a laptop or something to read the news or catch up on what's happened in the world. And this is a great little app, and you can create your own categories, politics, technology, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
It suggests categories for you as well, and you can pick up just about any site in the world, including Tech Central. I did notice that our extracts in our RSS are perhaps a little short, so I may look at expanding those extracts a little to make them more friendly for Feedly. Great app. If you're an RSS user and you're missing Google Reader, you probably know about Feedly already. But if you don't know what an RSS reader is, go check it out. It's actually quite fun. So that's Feedly, and it's available for all the major platforms.
Fantastic. And I think that is probably all we have time for this week, and a little bit of change.
For sure. Thanks, Craig. And as always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can send us a mail at info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, cheers. We'll be right back.